You're listening to Breaking Biz Dev with John Tyerman and Mark Wainwright. Conversations that break down, beat up, and redefine business development for the professional services firms of tomorrow. And now for your hosts, John and Mark.
Hello, John. Good to see you today. How are you?
Hey, Mark. Doing well. I'm excited for this podcast conversation with you.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone, for joining us on the Breaking Biz Dev podcast. We're going to feature some excellent frameworks from John. We're going to work through a few of the 7 content marketing frameworks for lead generation that he's come up with. He's developed, he has them posted on his site. We will have a link to his article on his Red Cedar Marketing website. And John, anything before we dive in to these 7 content marketing frameworks?
Well, I think it's important for us to mention that we are going to beat up lead generation.
There it is. There it is.
I think that there are some preconceived notions about generating leads and what that looks like in professional services firms. So these may be a different way to look at lead generation, and I think that's a good thing.
Great. I would totally agree. I mean, we've talked about this in the past. I believe there are professional services firms and some that I may even be familiar with, particular industries, certain firms that don't even believe that lead generation is something that marketing does.
Well, maybe we can change a few perspectives here and there.
Good. I'm totally up for it. I have inbound leads that come to me from the work that I do online. I have clients, current clients, previous clients that are a result of long-term relationships and good connections. What a lot of people believe is the main source of leads and new business, new opportunities. But I've also done enough work through marketing, creating content, possibly even using some little bits and pieces of your frameworks here to generate leads. So organizations that find me and come to me, and that's what this is all about. I do believe that it is a primary responsibility of the marketing team to generate new leads for their professional services firm. Absolutely.
I completely agree. And I think a lot of firms, these frameworks may be familiar to their marketing systems. They may be using some of these frameworks. And yet in the article, there's visual components. I know that we're on an audio podcast, but if you go to the blog post, there's some visuals that kind of show you how these frameworks go about. And I think using a framework is important because it helps keep marketing teams anchored. One thing I've noticed about marketers is they have a tendency to chase the shiny objects sometimes and kind of stray away from their strategy. And frameworks are a good way. It's like a container to help marketers stay focused a little bit.
I agree. I think the visuals you created are extremely useful. And we are talking through frameworks today, not scripts and not templates, right?
That's
something that I think a lot of people look for. They look for just tell me what to say in a script or just give me a blank template that I can fill in. I think in some circumstances, those types of things can be useful. I think frameworks are useful because they allow the required kind of variability in the customization needed for particular circumstances, but still give you sort of a pathway and some guidelines and some boxes that you can kind of work within. So I'm a big fan of frameworks. So let's talk about your 7 content marketing frameworks for lead generation. And you've put them into 3 buckets, and I'll kind of read through those buckets and you can elaborate a little bit.
Sure.
First bucket is frameworks for creating original content. The second is frameworks for curating external content. And the third is frameworks for maximizing existing assets.
The different content marketing frameworks that your firm is using currently or should be using, depending on your strategy, it really boils down to how mature your marketing program is within your organization.
Makes sense.
If it's a nascent marketing program, let's say you're starting from ground zero, you're probably going to want to create content. Your strategy may call for going out and looking at content that's out there in the marketplace and then curating that and serving that up to your audience with your unique perspective. And so I think those are a couple different approaches that firms, depending on their size, their marketing maturity, can go about. And that's why I've bucketed these frameworks into these three buckets.
Yeah, yeah, makes sense. So it's content you're creating, new stuff. It's stuff that exists out there on the internet, exists already. And it's content that exists within your organization mm-hmm. already. Maybe some existing thought leadership that you can start to maximize, repurpose, et cetera. Makes total sense. All right. So the seven, and I think, John, we're just going to run through the seven and then you can kind of touch on them. And there's just a few here for the sake of time, quite honestly, mm-hmm. that we're going to dig into a little bit. So the very first one that falls into that bucket of new content is the weekly newsletter.
Yeah. Email is one of those channels that's kind of stood the test of time. And I was doing a little bit of research on this, and the first email was actually sent in the 70s. And so it gained traction in the later 90s, and then it's become kind of a mainstay in digital marketing today,
right?
Where an email address is sort of this unique identifier for a person. You use your email address to log into software platforms. You communicate with people one-on-one in email. And I like to think of if social media is like talking to someone at a frat party, email is right. like talking with a friend over dinner. You're having yeah. a more personalized conversation, a more intimate conversation. And so a weekly newsletter is one of those frameworks where you can deepen your engagement with your audience. You can collect that email address and you have that line of communication. And in professional services, we're dealing with long sales cycles. And so an email weekly newsletter is a way to stay in front of that audience, to stay engaged with your audience over a long period of time.
I love it. I totally agree. I have an infrequent email newsletter list that I need to leverage more. I'm certain there's folks out there that fall into that same situation. There are other email newsletters that I receive regularly and offer me extreme value. So I'm with you on that one. There's some bits, there's even more detail on this weekly newsletter framework. Yeah. Let's run through the others and then we can loop back and talk about this weekly newsletter in detail.
Sure.
The second framework that you have listed here is that is creating new content is the podcast flywheel.
I'm a little biased here because I help professional services firms launch and grow their podcasts. But
case in point.
Exactly. You're listening right. to this podcast right now.
Yep.
I don't think that there is any better source of original content than a podcast. And here's why. Because you record a podcast once and you have the ability to repurpose that conversation into dozens of different formats, audio, right. video, text-based formats. You can take audio and transcribe it and then turn that into a blog post to fuel SEO. You can use a podcast for sales enablement. But then on top of that, I think we are inundated right now with a wave of artificial content. And I think podcasts are a way to stand out. You're recording a podcast, publishing podcast episodes, showing your flaws and your human element, right?
Right.
Is a way to humanize marketing. It's a way to make your message more relatable to the everyman.
I am with you 100% on that. And I think we're going to dig a little bit into that as well. You've got, as you mentioned, taking the original podcast content and then repurposing it in a number of different ways. Yeah. A fantastic tool. So we're going to come back to that. The third framework that you have under this category of new content that your organization can create is original research.
I spent the first 7 years of my career doing research for professional services firms through a marketing and branding agency called Hinge. And this was one of the frameworks that Hinge used to market the agency, was going out and doing research on looking at what are the fastest growing professional services firms? How do they go to market differently than average growth firms or no growth firms? And that really became a foundation of Hinge's marketing strategy. And there are professional services firms out there who conduct original research, and then they take those findings and they use it to fuel blog posts. I've also found that original research can be a great topic to talk about on a webinar. So you, much like a podcast where you create content from a single source, original research is that source, and then it can expand out. It's like a hub and spoke model into all these other different formats and channels.
Right, right. And since we're not going to come back and talk in detail about this, do you just want to just touch on all the different elements that are incorporated into original research?
Sure. Yeah. It can be complex. It can be big and cumbersome, but I found that if you work research, original research into your weekly or monthly workflows, then it can be less of a burden. And then since we're talking about how to use these frameworks for lead generation, one thing I've found is that people are very willing to give you their feedback, to take a survey. And then that information is valuable, not just to creating content, but for your sales team as well. If you're interviewing people for a research study, you're asking them about what their pain points are, what drives them to make decisions, that's useful information for doer sellers who need to understand those pain points so that they can articulate different messages to them when they're on sales and sales conversations. So
yeah,
that's yeah. How research can tie into lead generation, both from kind of like a bit like an intelligence, market intelligence standpoint, but then also it's a touch point on a buyer's journey. They're providing information to you. They're engaging with you. They're giving up information. There's kind of like a quid pro quo that happens there.
Yeah. Yeah. Gartner for many years has been a valuable source of research, and they're one of the big ones, right? But there are so many others that I turn to regularly for really reliable thought leadership, I think, and it's from their research. And I think that this research element is critical. It can be a lot of work, like you said, but I think it's super valuable. So these are the three original content sort of frameworks that are inside that first bucket, which is creating new content. It's the newsletter, it's the podcast flywheel, and then it's this original research. So our second bucket here is curating external content. So it's stuff that exists outside of your organization. And the first framework that you have in your article here is influencer co-creation. Tell us about that.
This all depends on your strategy and how you're going out and creating content and the types of information that you want to share with your audience. If there is existing information out there, if there are influencers, and I use that term, influencer is kind of a jaded term, and I'm just going to take a quick aside real quick.
Yeah.
I think in B2B and professional services, marketers use influencer marketing, but they don't want to call it influencer marketing.
Yeah, right, right.
And so it's like this kind of thing that nobody says, but everyone does. And if you don't have original content, or if you don't have a way to create original content, co-creating content with other influencers in your space, let's say maybe it's a software company that serves the same audience as you, right? No, right. Maybe it's like a CRM for AEC firms or some other thing. And you can go and you can take content that they are producing and you can add your own spin to it, right? And you can do this on LinkedIn. You can go and write a LinkedIn post. It's kind of like a low effort way of creating content, LinkedIn is. And then let's say that the original author, the original creator of that idea that you borrowed, they start engaging with you because you tagged them in the post, right? You're giving credit to them. They see right. that, they get a notification, they engage with you, you start a relationship. Maybe you do that a couple of times with their ideas. And then what you do is you expand upon those ideas into a blog post. And circle back to that original LinkedIn post and say, hey, Bob, I took your ideas and I expanded on it into a blog post. Would love to hear what you think. And then they read it. Maybe they share it with their network. And then from there, you can kind of build on that engagement. Maybe you found an influencer that you've got a good relationship with, and maybe you've got some good back and forth, and you're co-creating content together and sharing ideas. Well, that's a perfect time to invite them onto a podcast conversation where you can take it that next step and elaborate on that social media back and forth, record a conversation, and then maybe the next step is a webinar, right? And so there, you start small and it kind of snowballs into, okay, maybe there's something here that we can co-create around.
I love it. That, and just to be clear, that kind of what you just walked through right there really highlights the importance of these frameworks, because you could approach LinkedIn, your posts, your engagements, whatever you do on LinkedIn, really casually and not bring any thought and sort of planning and structure to it. But this, what you just talked through there, these frameworks allow you to bring some structure and some organization to the post. So you're just not randomly just posting or commenting on LinkedIn. You're actually bringing a little bit of structure and a framework to it with some means to an end. So great to highlight that. I think that's an excellent example. The second framework that you have within this second bucket of curating external content is something called content Darwinism. What is that?
I guess this kind of straddles the line between creating original content and curating existing content, but I follow a bunch of, there's this term that's bubbling up over the past year, this notion of creators. And there's the creator economy where you can go out and you can generate passive income by writing online. That's essentially kind of what it boils down to.
Right.
So I've been following some of these creators and I'm picking up on some of these patterns. And I ask myself, okay, well, how do these creators create so much content, right? And I think it's this kind of like combination of quantity and quality. At first, it's kind of what I saw was, okay, they're posting a lot of content. And then I started to really think about it. And it's really simple, actually. It's like throughput of ideas. And if you, the more you publish and post to social media, the more rapidly you're going to get feedback on the topics that resonate with your audience and the topics that don't.
Yeah.
And because social media is such an easy publishing platform, think of Twitter, you've got 280 characters to make your point, right? And so it kind of forces you to write in succinct thoughts.
Right, and X as it's known now, John, right?
Yeah. Forgive me. Yes. Forgive me, Elon. Yes, on X. Well, now you're not even limited to 280 characters anyway. That platform's a mess.
Yeah.
But
sorry, I derailed you on that.
No, it was a great aside.
Yeah.
With content Darwinism, social media is a very low barrier to publishing. And then so you can rapidly post those ideas. Well, let's say that you go back and you find that there's a couple of different topics that are resonating. You say, okay, well, I'm going to take those topics and I'm going to expand upon them into, let's say it's a newsletter or a blog post, right? And so then from there, you've got the next level up. Well, after a few months, go back into your Google Analytics and see, okay, which one of those blog posts got the most traffic? And then you find the blog post that kind of passed that second test, and then you take it and expand upon it into, let's say it's a webinar, or let's say it's a PDF that you offer on your website for download. So there's this natural progression of market-driven feedback that influences your content creation or your content curation efforts.
Yeah. Yeah. The words that come to mind for me are, you're throwing a bunch of stuff at the wall and you're kind of seeing what sticks, but instead of it being just a shotgun random approach, you're then taking some very sort of planful next steps with that content relative to analytics and other data you can get. So good.
You're making efficient use of your resources because social media is low risk, right? So instead, if you take an approach that I've seen many firms take is they go to an SEO tool like SEMrush or Ahrefs, and then they get a list of keywords that they say, okay, let's create blog content around these keywords. And they invest a lot of resources in creating that content, and then come to find out that there was only one or two topics out of, let's say, 20 that were hits. Well, the other 18 were, you invested a lot of resources into those content assets and they didn't perform. Instead, this framework essentially reduces the amount of effort that you need to invest in order to get to that realization of which topics actually resonate.
Got it. Got it. Good. Good. Makes sense. And I like the whole sort of Darwinism sort of language you use, like, hey, the best ones will survive and we need to focus on those to maximize that. So that's good. So yep. Those are the two that fall within that curating sort of external content. The last bucket we have are the frameworks for maximizing your existing assets, maybe stuff you've already created, stuff you've already written, right? And the first one inside that third area is demand capture funnel. I'm familiar with the term funnel, but let us know what's going on here.
Yeah, this is probably the most recognizable marketing framework. The concept of a funnel isn't anything new. This is something that's been around for almost 100 years. And so I think a funnel is something that's easy for key stakeholders to wrap their heads around. Okay, here's content that is aimed at building awareness. Here's content that's aimed at driving consideration for our services. And then here's content that is designed to help buyers make a purchase decision.
Yeah.
It's a logical way to organize content. However, funnels can get complex and they can take a long time to build all the different parts. It's like you're building this big thing that you turn on and hit go. And when people find you, they work their way through the funnel and become a lead. It works. It takes time to build. The challenge is the content that you fuel it with needs to be relevant. And so you may have content that and this bleeds into our next framework, but you may have content that you need to take and then repurpose in different formats in order for it to work within your marketing funnel.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The reason I call it the demand capture funnel is because in any given market, there is about 3% of the market that are actively on a buying journey. And then there's about 40% of the market. They're dissatisfied with their status quo, but maybe they're not ready to actively go out and look for a solution. And so this is the slice of the market that whose demand you can capture with a funnel. And so they're the ones that are going out there. Maybe they're searching for information to help them make a decision when the time comes, or maybe they're going out and searching for specific service providers. And so a demand capture funnel enables you to capture that demand and then convert that into leads and opportunities and revenue.
The funnel that you spoke through, awareness, consideration, purchase, we can explode that into, I often pull it apart into two funnels. One's a marketing funnel that's creating leads, and the other is the sales funnel that's creating clients, right? So this thing can get blown way apart in many different bits and pieces all within it. And there's different content that is appropriate at different points throughout that entire sort of journey when someone just becomes familiar with you all the way to when they become a fantastic client. So great framework on that one. And you're right. The whole funnel concept is something that is familiar to me and likely to others. I speak to it frequently. So this is a good one. So the very last framework in this kind of reworking existing assets, existing content is content recycling. Great name.
Well, reduce, reuse, and recycle.
Perfect.
Mark. And when we're talking about content, creating content is great in that you need to create content in order to engage with buyers online these days. I mean, that's just kind of like it's table stakes to create content. And where I've seen professional services firms, when they invest in content marketing, they'll publish content usually on a blog, sometimes on a podcast, sometimes in a newsletter, an email newsletter, and sometimes on social media. They'll publish this content and then they won't do anything with it. They'll promote it maybe once, maybe they'll get a post from their LinkedIn company page, but then that's it. and it sits on their blog. It collects dust, and the hope is that it'll rank for the keyword that they designed it to rank for. And that's not usually the case. If you publish 20 posts, maybe one or two will rank the way that you envisioned it ranking. And so with content recycling, essentially what you're doing is, let's say you're a mid-sized firm, right? And you've been investing in content for the last 10 years. Let's say you've published on average one blog a month for the last 10 years. Right. Okay. So you've got 100 plus blog posts. And so content recycling, the whole purpose of this is to go back and refresh that existing content. So go back, update it. Maybe there's new case studies that you can bring in. Maybe there's an outdated statistic that you can update. Maybe there's a video that you recorded on the subject that you can embed on that blog page. And then once you've updated that core, what I call a core piece of content, then you format it for distribution. And distribution is kind of this buzz term that's floating around in the software space, but essentially what it means is you're taking the ideas. Let's use the blog post as an example. You're taking the ideas within the blog post and you're structuring them to be consumed natively on platforms like email or social media or YouTube. And so they can stand alone. You're not just posting a link to the blog post and saying, hey, read this. You're saying, here's the idea. And then you don't even link to the blog post. You just post the idea and you start a conversation on that platform. Right. And then you go and distribute it. So that's the whole framework of content recycling, refreshing your existing content, formatting it for distribution, and then going out and distributing it on those key channels.
It makes total sense. I think virtually any firm out there who's created content in the past can review it, refresh it, revise it. Even you and I, John, that have written content that is maybe even a few years old or so, can go back and look to see if there's anything new we can add to that content. I know you and I talk through various ideas that we've developed over time. I'm certain I have blog posts on my site I can go back to and maybe insert some new content, maybe some content from our podcast, maybe a video that we've created, whatever it is. I can go back to that and refresh it, and what's old is new again, right? So I think that's brilliant. So there's our seven, right? The seven are the weekly newsletter, the podcast flywheel, original research, influencer co-creation, content Darwinism, demand capture funnel, and this whole idea of content recycling. We said we were going to do a little bit deeper dive into a few of these. I'd love to do that. I think we have just a little bit of time here. I don't want to leave wanting more. So what do you think?
I was going to ask you, Mark, what's one of these frameworks, and be honest with me, that really stood out to you? And maybe we can go a little bit deeper into that.
I love the podcast flywheel. I think it's a great idea. You've talked about it. Obviously, listeners of podcasts, at least one would imagine that they've taken to this channel and maybe they're considering their own podcast. I am absolutely in that camp where I have listened to podcasts for years and decided that it was time to start something up. So that has worked for me. And I am in the process alongside you as we create this podcast content to see all the different ways that we can use it, repurpose it, et cetera. So, heck, we can spend a little bit of time on the podcast flywheel if that sounds good to you.
Sure.
Great.
Yeah, for this one, and let me just first touch on how a podcast can impact lead generation. Let's suppose that you launch a podcast and it's an interview series where you interview clients and prospects about their challenges. And you start off, you're interviewing your current clients. First of all, that's a great way to get case studies. So I just want to set that aside. So with a podcast, go out and you're interviewing your clients, you're getting case studies, case study material. And then you use those friendly contacts that you have to launch with, let's say it's a batch of three or four episodes. Those conversations act as social proof for when you go out and you pitch people that are their prospects. Maybe it's a contact that you have an outstanding proposal with, or maybe that represents an opportunity for your firm.
Right.
A podcast conversation is a good way to establish relationships. It's a good way to deepen engagement. And it's a low lift. People like to talk about themselves, and people like to talk about the work they've done. And so a podcast conversation gives you a meeting with these prospects, if you want to think about it that way, where you can record that content. But then afterwards, it gives you an opportunity to tag them on social media. It gives you an opportunity to take video clips and post them on YouTube. So we have a LinkedIn showcase page where we publish video clips from our podcast. We also publish the podcast on audio channels like Spotify and Apple, right? So listeners can consume podcast content by listening in their car, by listening while they work out. They can also look, find it on social media. They can read about it. So you're addressing all the different ways that people learn with podcast content.
Right, right. And I love the word flywheel, the concept flywheel, because it gives me a sense of energy and momentum that once you get something up and spinning, that there's so many different ways, or there's so many different opportunities to kind of build that momentum, get it spinning faster and faster so that it continues to gain momentum and gain energy. And that's kind of my experience that we've seen here. Is we're creating content. A lot of times we need to create supporting written content, and maybe it already exists, or maybe the podcast spurs the post that we create on our site. And then there's little snippets that we use, both video snippets and written snippets. And so it just continues to build on each other. And like you mentioned before, podcasts are a great source of original content. Even if an individual appears on multiple podcasts. And I've done this in the past. I'm absolutely kind of guilty of this, that you never really say the exact same thing the same way twice. So every single time you are working with someone, maybe you're a guest, maybe you're hosting a podcast, and every single time that you're thinking something through, inevitably it comes out a little bit differently. So this is fantastic. We got 7 frameworks. We ran through them. We put them into 3 different buckets. We dove a little bit deeper into this podcast flywheel. I would encourage all of the listeners to check out the article and kind of think through which of those frameworks, maybe all of them do, but maybe some are more important to you than others, to wrap that into your marketing efforts, to give those marketing efforts a little bit of structure and form with those frameworks. So hopefully your firm can start to increase the lead generation sort of capacity of your marketing team. What do you think? Anything else, John?
I think that was well said, Mark. Honestly, if there's a framework that maybe I didn't think of that should be in this article, reach out to me on LinkedIn and let me know. I practice what I preach, so I have updated this article a few times already. After this podcast conversation, I'm going to add this in as a media player in that article. So content is never done. It's always growing and evolving.
I love it. I love it. Good. Let's end there. John, it's been a pleasure. Until next time.
Until next time.
Thanks for listening to Breaking Biz Dev. Subscribe on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, or listen to the show at breakingbizdev.com. This episode was produced by Red Cedar Marketing. If you think a business podcast is right for your company, visit redcedarmarketing.com to learn more.